Hour number four continues to roll along here as we are about halfway through round four of the NHL draft here in Buffalo. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer, Brayton Wilson. We'll talk with Joe Cali here in a little bit. We'll talk with Paul Hamilton in just a little while as well, as the Sabres are at the moment expected to pick at 124. We are at 113. The Montreal Canadiens are on the clock, and somewhat disappointingly, gentlemen, nothing has happened.
Here, Zach, here's the steering wheel. Have fun. I'm out.
I'm very surprised that just truly nothing has happened. We had some moves yesterday, right? Mace McTavish goes to St. Louis. You had Dorfeev. He goes to the New York Rangers. You had rumblings yesterday. I know Elliot Friedman even opened up his, I guess if you want to call it, peace with ESPN when they were kind of getting ready to start round two. He opened it up by, you know, Dallas is actively now shopping Jason Robertson. Zach Werenski went from a guy that was going to have his meeting with Columbus following the draft to now all of a sudden they are actively listening to teams, and he even had some teams just straight up out there. Philadelphia, Carolina, Dallas, I think were the big three there. And then for the Sabres, they were part of this as well. Connor Hellebuyck did waive his no trade or no move, whatever the clause was for him, to come to Buffalo if they could complete the trade. They just couldn't. And since then, we've gotten Brandon Carlo moving for 2 third-round picks.
Yeah, and some other trade that Brayton is going to bring up, and I'm going to dismiss it. But that doesn't count.
It's
see, we already did it.
Trade of picks.
You're welcome. Anyway,
whoopsie-doo.
So there's something though that I like. Now that you say that again, though, about Connor Hellebuyck, Zach, I'm glad the Sabres learned something from the Colton Parayko trade. Talk to the player first.
Right. Figure that out first.
Get that part out of the way first. Okay, good. Now that we have that, let's proceed.
That one's something, though, because that was at least far enough towards the finish line. Because I can understand where probably some Sabres fans are waking up this morning or going to sleep last night pretty disappointed. It felt like the Sabres were going to make another big move. That adding a defenseman with the 45th overall pick and Anton Wahlberg was not going to be the only things they do. That there was more coming. And instead it was just two draft picks. Two draft picks that can be fun. Now they're into the pipeline. There is some intrigue around both. However, to this point, it is kind of like, oh, where is everything? I was promised kind of the world. And now it's you're going to get prospects that'll be here in 2 or 3 years, and that is a bit of a shame to this point.
You off air mentioned something very very poignant in what was going on every day leading to the draft. We had something every day. The moment the Stanley Cup got handed over, deals started happening.
People were moving. Rumblings were happening. Oh yeah.
So the tweet that came in from Jonathan really does start to hit home here for the draft. Decentralizing the draft is one of the worst things the NHL could have done for itself. That's where the trade alerts become a big deal. That's where pressing the button to get your trade alert and the goal horn and everything like that.
Section 301.
That kid was a hero to start the day and would have gotten a hero's welcome if the Sabres traded a first-round pick and the kid got to hit the button.
I mean, looking back, his introduction was hitting it twice in a row, like a bang-bang. So you kind of felt like, oh, here we go.
And then we never saw him again.
Well, we saw him again. It was just for very little.
Edwards was the one that pushed it next.
Oh, yes.
So
yes.
We never saw that.
We never saw him again. It's a shame.
And I would imagine he was wearing a Leafs jersey. I'd imagine they took McKenna. He dipped after pushing the button, and that was it.
I mean, to be honest, he kind of saw everything he probably wanted to see that night. But
he got to push the button. You know what? That's probably a peak moment.
Yeah.
It's never getting better than this. I'm out.
But the trades we saw after that were just teams moving up a few spots. We did see a goalie move for a first-round pick, which was kind of something. But there just hasn't been those notable names. Now, at least for the Sabres, that is a huge positive. None of the big moves have been made without you doing something. It is not like Jason Robertson is now an Ottawa Senator. Zach Werenski is a Flyer. And Connor Hellebuyck went to Florida. And we're all sitting here going, cool, we have two young pieces. But what happened? We were left at the altar. What's going on? That hasn't transpired. You know, Matthew Nyes is still a Maple Leaf. I just wonder now if, and to the listener's point, and Derek, to your point, maybe the decentralization, maybe the fact that rounds 2 through 7 are now 2 minutes. I mean, it's a positive for all of us watching and listening that the draft will be over mercifully relatively soon. But there is maybe also something to that of we're just going to kind of wait to do our business leading up to July 1st.
But let's remember, guys, the NHL wanted this.
Yes, they did.
Executives, owners wanted this. Why? Because it's a cost-saving measure for being decentralized. You don't have to spend to have all of your staff in a hotel room and to get them all shuttled off to a particular destination. Whereas I thought it was funny when Jarmo Kekalainen got asked of it on Wednesday after the Byram trade. He got asked about the decentralization. It's just like, look, from a scouting standpoint, this was our time to shine. We loved doing this format of the draft because it was our moment in the light. Our work, our dedication to this sport gets put out there and honored and celebrated at the draft. And you take that away from them by doing this decentralized format. It's more than just, obviously, oh, there's no trades, there's no conversations, it's not fun that way. It also takes away from the opportunity for teams to actually recognize their staff and the work that they've done to pick these players.
And especially, too, for someone like Jarmo, who mentioned it yesterday, too, that with the media, that he kind of doesn't bother them. He'll give his opinions here or there, but he may not be a strong one. He really lets Jerry Fortin and his staff do their thing.
Yeah.
And Paul, I thought, was totally right in bringing
because
up.
Jerry Fortin has actually done a very good job with his draft classes over the years.
But I think Paul was right in bringing up, too, Fortin has survived 3 GMs.
Yeah.
Like that, I think that alone probably tells you job he's doing is that every GM that comes in goes, no, keep him. Him and his staff, keep that.
Or he impresses those GMs enough to go, I should keep him.
I mean, it's
like,
one
of those things where they're either told or they're convinced by the man himself based on, hey, this is my track record. This is our process. He's either impressing them or they're getting timely advice on, no, hold on to that guy. You know where the decentralization really hurts? It hurts a team that has 104 picks between selections.
Oh, yeah. We're just hanging out here. It's starting to move now through round 4, which is good. We're now at pick 118. The Sabres are going to pick at 124. After that, we'll talk with Joe Calley and Paul Hamilton.
You talk about Jerry Fortin surviving 3. Mm-hmm. There's one scout that I very vividly remember actually surviving everything in the organization still, that's still there right now. He was the director of amateur scouting for a while. He was the one that was actually making like those picks in some of the old videos from back in the day. Kevin Devine.
Yes.
Kevin Devine is still with the organization.
And he's been there through some of those lean years.
Started with Darcy in 1998 as a pro scout.
That
eventually became an amateur scout, then director of amateur scouting, assistant general manager, director of player personnel. So like in 2015-16, he was the ones naming like the late first round pick. So when the Sabres had multiples, they'd have Tim Murray or whoever name the first one. And then he was often the one naming the second one.
And he would go in.
So when I mentioned,
and he's still there as a scout now today. Which
but also,
is
a, when I mentioned like 100 picks between selections, right? First of all, it's wild, right? Second of all, if the NHL had the centralized format and all the tables are there, I would imagine Jarmo's bored and wants to start something fun.
Maybe. The issue here, though, with us doing here day 2, they only have 3 picks to play with this year. They have a fourth rounder.
Oh, I'm talking about like player acquisition or sending out. Like, that's something that happens when teams go over to other tables.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, Don, how are you, man? Hey, what's up? You know, hey, what's going on with
how's the kids?
How's the kids? How's the wife? Everything's great.
Is your grandma feeling all right?
Talk to me about Dylan Larkin.
Right. So someone's joke lands hard enough and now you're staying at the table,
like,
and you
all
can
of a sudden
Larkin.
Like a hand is on the shoulder and like you get like the lack of lighting, all of a sudden it just gets more sinister.
You use him by his full name. Stephen Paul Iserman. I don't even know if that's Steve Iserman's real name. Stephen Paul.
Stephen, what's up with Dylan Larkin?
Stephen Frederick Iserman.
Frederick. That works. I'll take that
I
one.
I need to talk to you about.
Do you want to know what
more
it actually
cider.
Is?
Hit me, TJ.
Actually, yeah.
It's Gregory.
Gregory.
That works. That very,
Stephen
very
Gregory
much
Iserman
works.
Talked Stephen to me about Dylan Larkin.
Gregory.
What's up with the three-team
on Larkin, list? Though, he seems to be like the one. There's no rumors around him. I was going to say, he sort of gets the offseason underway of like, oh, this player wants out. Detroit's kind of in disarray.
He made that known before the Stanley Cup final was even done.
And
he broke a cardinal sin.
He did. And yet, nothing's around him. He's like the one big – because even if you want to go to Robert Thomas with St. Louis, it literally takes the Blues going, hey, yeah, no, Thomas Parayko, not available. We're done. Like, those names were still out there. Larkin – sort of gets the ball rolling this offseason a little bit early, right? Breaking the cardinal rule. You're trying to get the offseason going before the cup's been handed out. Garbage. What are we doing here? And yet nothing. There's nothing on him. Hellebuck is somebody that hasn't even requested a trade. Neither is Rawinski. And yet those markets seem to be really turning.
It helps when you're, you know, interest in other teams involves more than three teams written on a napkin in crayon.
Yeah, I can imagine he did not want that list out there.
And one of those teams gave up assets to instead acquire Brady Tkachuk. So now it's two teams, one of whom only has like $3 million and has only nine forwards to their roster. And then there's Minnesota. Dylan Larkin's list right now realistically says Minnesota.
Which, like, I think is like that, like that one makes complete sense to me. They desperately need center help. Like, he's not a 1C.
Right.
Like, I've heard every scouting report on him is like, the perfect world, he's a 2C. But with Minnesota, they're like, no, please. We need center depth desperately. We'll get you in as a 1C.
But Minnesota doesn't really have the prospects to get that done either. They have picks, but, like, they don't have anything really in the pipeline it worth trading.
They're probably also not going to have cap space here pretty soon with Quinn Hughes.
Yeah.
I would imagine they want to get him done very quickly. Kirill Kaprizov makes $17 million a year after his extension last offseason. That is easily the biggest contract so far in the NHL. Real quick here, gentlemen, before we get to the Sabres pick, as the Bruins are on the clock at 1:22, I do want to get your thoughts now that you've slept on it, on the Sabres two picks last night. Daxon Rudolph, the right shot defenseman from Prince Albert in the Western Hockey League, and then Ilya Morozov, the forward out of Miami University.
Brayton, do you mind if I go first? Because I know you're going to have more thoughts.
Have at it.
All right. So, overall, I like it. I think those are two very good prospects that have at least easy potential to become NHLers. Brayton was bringing up the percentages in an earlier segment in the last hour. And it's more or less, okay, so I've got a scoring right-handed shot defenseman. So that if Zellweger doesn't pan out, or Crevier doesn't pan out, he'll be ready. Sick. All right. Or say that Zellweger does, and he prices himself out of Buffalo. All right. In comes Rudolph. Good. And then with Morozov, this is a kid, and that term gets thrown around pretty loosely. When you know when you're the older you get, the more you could say the word kid, because people are just younger than you at that point. But this is an actual kid, a teenager who does not even hit 18, playing in the NCAA.
Yeah, he spent his freshman year in the NCAA, 17 years old, 20 points in 36 games.
So actual kid, half a point a game, playing against 20-year-olds, playing ages up. This isn't major junior where you cap out at 19 or 20. This is the NCAA. There are going to be players as old as 23, 24 even. Because they play their, because some of those guys will play their full career of major junior, then get a scholarship.
Well, I was even going to say, too, I mean, you don't even necessarily need that. Like, that explains itself, but I know the NFL draft, we talk about it all the time of these older quarterbacks or even just older pass rushers, anything where it's like, well, yeah, you're dominating 18, 19, 20-year-olds. For him, it's sort of the same thing of, you're playing pretty well at 17. Now, his frame is maybe the most kind of
it's not 17
captivating. Yeah, it's captivating about him. Is like, what do you mean you're 17? You're 6'3", 200 pounds. Like, what do you mean?
Yeah.
I was talking with Brayton about it yesterday when we were sort of getting up there. I'm like, I don't know much about him. I know his age. I know that he typically plays up a division seemingly his whole life. But is he a guy that maybe we're worried, because of his frame, is not going to have the speed element to keep up with the Sabre style of play?
I will give my thoughts both on Daxon Rudolph and Morozov. I mean, I'm fine with the Morozov pick for sure.
Mm-hmm.
That was that perfect range right there, right near the end of that tier of players where it was like, hey, if this guy's available, that's probably the best spot you're going to get him is 20. And Morozov was, I had picked him to go 18th overall, I think, in my mock draft.
Mm-hmm.
He went 20, right around that range. Daxon Rudolph, I think, I felt bad kind of after the fact because I was kind of caught off guard and I feel like I gave a bad light on him. It was only more so just because I thought he was more so in the bottom range of the top 10. Like, you know, a guy that went 8th, 9th, 10th overall. Mm-hmm. He's a good defenseman. He really is. It's a defensive heavy top part of this draft. So to see him go 4th overall is a bit shocking, but not entirely overwhelmingly like, what are the Sabres doing? It's more so just, okay, do they believe that he is that he's got the highest upside of all the defensemen that are available in this year's draft? The Sabres seem to believe that.
He had 28 goals last year.
28 goals, 78 points. He was 3rd in defensive scoring in the entire Western Hockey League last year, which is a very good stat to put up. He skates very well. He moves around the ice. They're banking on the fact that I've seen a comparable where he's most compared to Zach Werenski.
Which based
they're banking on that high stats, upside will pay off in the end. They're banking on he goes to play at one of the best collegiate programs in all of college hockey and will thrive there. He's also going to go play with fellow first-round pick Ryan Lynn, who went to the Sharks yesterday, too. So that should also help as well. And he's also a right-shot defenseman.
They have a lot of them now.
So I feel, I felt bad yesterday after they made the pick because I feel like I might have come across as being too critical. I think it's very fair to say that his game overall, there are times where he just looks like he's out there and he's kind of just skating around, not doing much. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. Again, a lot of the times they say with defensemen in the NHL, if there's no bad things to say about them, or if they're not being noticed, they're oftentimes doing good things. And then when they're being noticed, they're either being noticed because they're doing really well or they're playing bad. And Daxon Rudolph, when he's not playing good and being noticed, he's quiet, which often means he's just there and he's doing his job.
It also did seem like yesterday, and by the way, the Sabres are on the clock, but it seemed like yesterday people, when they were discussing Chase Reed compared to Daxon Rudolph, it was Rudolph had the bigger role mm-hmm. on his team. Chase mm-hmm. Reed had the smaller role, but maybe the output that Chase Reed had was maybe more impressive.
Yes.
But Rudolph does seem to be that player that the ceiling, though, for him, like you mentioned, is Werenski.
Yes.
He's higher. And then I wonder, too, for the Sabres here, real quick before we get to their pick, University of Denver, David Carl. He seems to be a coach that everyone wants in the NHL. Maybe the Sabres do believe in kind of that development there.
Doing a Niagara University video.
So we seem we're having a little bit of something here. Is it maybe a tribute video right before the Sabres pick?
Yeah, we're getting a thing, yes.
For Niagara University.
All right, then.
I'm not in the air. I'm just telling you.
All right, well, we'll see when this pick does come in here. There was a goalie picked right before the Sabres for St. Louis.
Vladimir Proskurin.
What position do you want the Sabres to go in here? They go both defense and forwards.
Care.
Yeah, I feel bad. It's fourth round.
This is going to sound dismissive. It's a fourth round selection.
Yeah.
Whoever you take,
whoever's highest on their board.
And you know what? I will applaud the people that have opinions on a fourth round selection.
I'm coming in now. Like,
because
here,
you either
like,
have
I got nothing.
Because you either have expert analysis, or the stones to think that you know what you're talking about a fourth round selection in the NHL draft.
Maybe
so. You either have confidence or expertise.
Maybe you saw him once. Maybe. I don't know.
So,
but I do want to say that on Daxon Rudolph, I do wonder if, because Brayton, you were mentioning too, a lot of these players in the first round were going to Michigan State.
Michigan State.
And I do wonder maybe for the Sabres, it was they look at his development path and go, we trust that path. And I heard you guys talking about too, the transfer portal. Will some teams be like, go transfer somewhere else? But let's see if we can get the pick here. May not be able to get the pick live.
The Buffalo Sabres are proud to select from St. John, Oliver Mrnjic.
So Oliver Mrnjic, I don't know position yet. We're going to find out here in just a moment. He was at the draft. Good.
Hey, there we go.
Very nice. Way to have that moment. All right, good. He is a center.
Oliver's
another 17-year-old.
Oh, a nice Latvian.
Another 17-year-old, 6 foot, 200 pounds, shoots left-handed. So they're going for young guys.
Which is saying something in an NHL draft.
Right, right, when like everyone's 18. Although there was somebody in the second round that was 19 years old mm-hmm. that goes to the Kings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it was a big thing.
Overager.
It was like, you know, he missed out on his first year, kind of worked on
re-enters
his game.
Re-enters the draft.
And is a second round pick, so good for him.
Oliver's Mrnjic is from Riga Latvia, 17 years old, so he's a younger prospect, 6'1", 192 pounds, according to Elite Prospects. He played with the St. John's Sea Dogs, 20 points in 31 games as a center, and he's committed to go to Boston College, and according to Elite Prospects, he will not be playing at Boston College until the 27-28 season. So more likely than not, he plays one more season in the Q, and mm-hmm. then decides to make the jump to the collegiate ranks. So, yeah.
Cool. On that, because we've got now, what is it, four more picks to wrap up the fourth round here, and then the Sabres are a little bit later on in the fifth round. Real quick, before we take our first time out, Brayton and Derek, for both of you guys, it does seem like now with NIL, with the transfer portal, that the college route seems to be one that a lot of players are deciding to go. And it's not out of the realm that some of these, especially higher-end prospects, want to do something a little bit different, right? I mean, 10 years ago now, a big thing with Auston Matthews is that he was in Switzerland. You know, he took very much the path not often taken. Gavin McKenna, he sort of is the first guy to take the dive after being in what was he, the WHL? He takes the dive into college, goes to Penn State, and it doesn't go perfectly for him right away. Mm-hmm. Like, there were rumblings, or there were some feelings, I guess, around him that maybe he's not the number one overall pick. And you're starting to see it with a lot of these guys that they're all eventually, many of them are going to college.
It more now. Eventually became, for McKenna's case, okay, maybe he's not the generational player, but mm-hmm. he certainly still is seen as the top player in this draft. The college route is probably the best for all of these players, quite honestly, just because you're playing at the junior level. You're playing more so against players your level, your age, your body condition, skill set. You go to the collegiate level, and it's quite a step up from the junior days. And Derek and I was talking about this earlier. It's just like for any prospect that comes in and is already playing college hockey, that immediately helps them take that step up in terms of getting more eyeballs to them and getting more of a focus, is because they're already playing against tougher competition.
And but now it's maybe become one of the better development leagues. It's not even really a league necessarily, but it's become a development league for the NHL. It's why even before the draft, even before the trade up to number four overall for the Sabres, Ilya Morozov was always a prospect I was keeping an eye on, just because 17 years old, already in mm-hmm. college, and we never know. He may transfer from Miami of Ohio to maybe a bigger program, get that step up again, because that seems to be what his career is, or he may dominate in Miami of Ohio, but that always kind of was eye-popping to me of, you're a young dude going to college, you moved over from Russia at 14 years old, and while he's not dominating, it's the context around him of he's 17, playing, as Derek pointed out, maybe guys that are 7 years older than him in some cases.
So I did find a little bit of a little scouting report for Mirnieks. Olivers Mirnieks, Latvian import, performed well internationally, should be in the mix in the middle rounds. Let's see.
Saw a stat that he led all forwards at the under-18 World Juniors in ice time. 21-48.
Playing on a team like Latvia that,
but
you know.
So they lean on him for heavy minutes. Good for that. So that means that he is more than capably relying on the pressure.
He was battling injury all season long. The pros to his game is that it revolves around his headiness and hardworking style as a two-way center. His hockey intelligence and compete really stands out.
I hear dog.
A lot of Latvians
play very much that way. They're very much hardworking. They're, you know, you get some people in leagues where the talent is there, but a lot of nations like Latvia and some of the other smaller nations, a lot of them are all just dogs. They all just work hard and are just all over pucks and everything.
Hey, you know what? If there's no ceiling or if there's low ceiling to that kind of pick in the fourth round, fine. If there's a floor to that, though, good. Get yourself some more of these later picks that start peppering into the lineup, into the bottom six.
803-0550, the number to call. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer, Brayton Wilson, you're heading out, right? You're getting out of here? Very nice. Brayton Wilson going to get out of here. Held it down since 11 o'clock, so he's going to bounce. I'll stick here with Derek. TJ Luckman on the Wheels of Steel. We'll talk with Paul Hamilton and Joe Calley coming up in a little bit as we continue to roll here. Day two of the NHL draft and coverage on WGR. It's brought to you by Outlet Liquor. When you need to stock up, it's the place to buy a case. What's your outlet? By Fiegel Carr and Joyce, your border attorneys, and by Dash's Market, serving Western New York for over 100 years. Shop the family of finer foods. We'll be right back on WGR. We roll along here on a Saturday, day two of the NHL draft. It'll be rounds 2 through 7. We are wrapping up round number 4 here. The Sabres did make their pick at number 124, Olivers Mrnjavčević out of the Q, St. John, 17 years old, another 17-year-old forward for the Sabres, 6'1". He's expected to play at Boston College in the fall of 2027. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer, Braden Wilson, still kind of here. I think he's just typing away. He's not really going to be
jumping
on.
He's just typing and not really. Like, he's here. You can't even say he's here in spirit. He's here physically.
That's about it. That's about it.
But the headphones are off.
Next time Sabres pick, round 5, pick 156, and then they'll wrap up their draft, hopefully. Round 6, pick 188. I want to go to the trades they did make, defensemen. Olin Zellweger and Louis Crevier?
Yes.
We kind of have a better idea of where those two are at least in the Sabres' mindsets, where we sit here on, what is it, June 27th?
That's correct.
We kind of have a better idea. They're going to be competing for Bo Byram's spot.
They, and not only competing, but you might be able to aggregate that with the two players that you brought in. And I thought that that was the more important task than dealing with the Tuck replacement. It was the Byram replacement. You needed to make sure that you could restore the superpower. You have one guy who is a swift skater, fast puck mover, has a lot of the potential to put up Byram's numbers. And in his first 3 years, kind of mirrors Byram's production. Only difference being a little bit more of a lack of ice time.
Mm-hmm.
Byram, by year 3, was starting to hit the 20-minute threshold.
Number 4 overall pick compared to Zellweger, I think, was a second-rounder. Yeah.
But other numbers, similar. Defensively, a little bit weaker. Playing next to Owen Power, that will help.
That's the thing. That even when it was just Crevier that they had brought in that I was wondering about, of you still have 3 of the 4 core defensemen on the roster, all under contract. And specifically with Power, he seemed to be able to get the most out of Byram. Byram, to that point of his career, really going into this year, was he's a Dahlin merchant. Without Rasmus Dahlin, he looks like a completely different player, and it's not a positive thing. Where then all of a sudden this year, he's with Owen Power for the most part because Samuelson is with Dahlin, and it completely changes. Again, it has now gotten to the point that Kyle Davidson, the Chicago Blackhawks GM, fully is prepared to pay him like he's been a number one defenseman his entire career, when up to this point he has not yet been a number one defenseman. So you do wonder if you put a guy like an Olin Zellweger, who very much looks like a Bo Byram type archetype, which, by the way, does fit what the Sabres do, so that makes much more sense compared to maybe the trade deadline acquisitions they had made at defense with Logan Stanley or Luke Shen, where you're sort of wondering, and this is my biggest issue, where do they fit? You know, stylistically wise, how does this work for the Sabres? Where it seems like for these last two guys, it makes a lot more sense. Crevier, if we're taking odds on this, I would imagine is more likely a third pairing defenseman, and that they like the size aspect. They're hoping that he's going to be a younger version of what they were getting in Stanley or Shen, and kind of go by based off of matchups and go from there, where Olin Zellweger is maybe supposed to be more along the lines of, okay, he's our actual Byram replacement for right now.
Yes. And that's where I think the combination really works, and that's why, like, the Daxon Rudolph pick is really fascinating to me. Is you've got a run-and-gun style defenseman, right-handed shot, that will probably take a couple of years. Okay, well, I've got a restricted free agent in Zellweger who probably will negotiate a 3-year deal.
Right, you'll bridge him.
You bridge him, and if Zellweger prices himself out of Buffalo, in comes Rudolph.
So you bring up Rudolph, though. I mean, and I get it because he's the fourth overall pick last night. I said it yesterday, though, with it was the three of us and Brian Koziel. Where does that leave Mirka? I still look at the fact that he was traded by this GM. It's just Colton Parayko does not say yes. And so, I mean, that was my feeling yesterday, too. We were hurtling towards pick 20. Is this now a redundant position that they're going to have to move out one of these guys? Because kind of like we talked about with the forwards not that long ago, and they eventually move out Matt Savoy, not all of you are going to be on the roster. I mean, just flat out, not all of you are going to be here. And so I'm kind of maybe I shouldn't be because we're all still waiting for any sort of movement to happen. But there are rumblings out there. There have been reports. And so maybe something will come of it very soon. I look at somebody like a Roddy Mirka and I do wonder just where does he fit in their plans anymore? Because it seemed like 6 months after his draft, the plans were, dude, you're a really nice trade piece. And we're going to use it. You're not playing in Buffalo. And then the trade is nixed and it kind of all goes away. But even then, I've got Keith Pelly, who runs the Maple Leafs, bringing him up because it seemed like, ooh, we're maybe the Sabres dangling him.
Might have been
the Maple
attached
Leafs.
To the Matthew Nice trade.
The Matthew Nice trade. I am waiting for anything on that. And I think any big trade the Sabres do, I am waiting to see Roddy Mirka's name.
Speaking of Matthew Nice, by the way, you know, one of the many players that's not traded yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Man, how mad is Montreal that Brad Treliving filed that trade at 3:01?
Right, how did Travis put it? Travis Yost put it to us during the week, the 25th hour?
Yes.
Right, it just passed the deadline.
And I'm pretty sure it was rumored that the Montreal GM had some choice words for Treliving about that.
There was a report that he basically told him, like, if you still have your job in the summer, you need to honor this trade.
Yeah, and... Well, unfortunately, he didn't. And now, yeah, Zach, your theory about yesterday with Kyle Davidson's price point on the value for trading for Bo Byram, I think it is part of what rings true here. Like, we've had trades leading up to the draft. I think the decentralization and the quick time of between picks is really hurting.
I mean, you're saying that. We're flying through round five now.
Sure. Yeah, I'm talking about trades.
The speed is legitimate.
Speed's working. We're going to be done before you're done at four.
We are flying through round five.
I'm going to convince myself to be a good friend and stay here with you, aren't I?
We are flying through round
I'm going
five.
To, I'm going to end up staying here, aren't I? So, but like, in terms of like Nice and everyone else that's being put on the trade block, so to say, it's just another one of those players that you see the example of. That didn't happen either. And the Sabres, probably rightfully so, saying, you want pick what? No. Like, Toronto fans on social media got Rangers-esque in terms of their valuation of Matthew Nice and what the trade market could bring. But I think some of that had to do with Byram. And your theory, I think, really rings true. Did Kyle Davidson get the wool pulled over his head so proficiently that all teams started to wonder, wait, could I charge more in terms of value for my players?
Right. Is this now the standard being set?
Can I move the price to
the
doing
the second
business?
Round pick is no longer the standard.
Yes.
Right. Right.
And yet the Sabres were able to make a move that involved one of those.
I think you can just look at the Connor Hellebuyck deal that doesn't go through, which is also part of the frustration going in today, is there's a real possibility we're talking about a Connor Hellebuyck acquisition and maybe still Daxon Rudolph from last night if Winnipeg was willing to do a pick swap of 4 and 8 and then, of course, the rest of the deal. But Elliot Friedman, earlier today, right before the start of round two, when he's doing his piece with the NHL Network, is outright saying, like, many around the league thought Hellebuyck was going to be a Sabre. He had waived his no trade or no move. I'm not exactly sure on the specifics of this contract, but he had waived it. He was happy to go to Buffalo. But the Sabres thought this is too steep of a price. You heard Yarmo talk about it yesterday.
We needed
openly acknowledged that nothing was attractive enough for us. He even outright mentions two teams, like, I would imagine, because he doesn't outright say it, but he mentions teams wanting to move up. I think Calgary was one of those teams, going from, I believe it was 6 to 4, if that would have happened. But potentially that trade he pulls with Chicago, while it is brilliant and the value is great, it maybe also set a league onto a standard that was just wholly unrealistic.
Yeah, I like your theory on that. Because you did mention, like, yesterday, who moved? On the trade bait list of the players that everyone was keeping their eyes on, McTavish is the only one. And that's because the Blues had 4 first-round picks and no GM wants to be that busy.
And then you even look at the other trade made last night, the other one that's pretty big, J.J. Paterka. He goes for 2 firsts.
It's the same price.
It's the same price, and we're all sitting there going,
I beg your pardon?
You mean the guy that was on the 4th line by the end of the season? That guy?
Who's 7.5 or 7.7.
He does have his new deal. I mean, he does have that.
That's on the fourth line, you're telling me? Oh, no. And Peterka getting moved for Utah, like, of course it makes sense. You got two first-round picks out of a guy that's on the fourth line to end your year, and the head coach who seemingly disagreed with him got an extension. It made too much sense for Utah to make that move.
Even Pavel Dorofeev, by the way, that trade, it's two first-round picks as well. It's 26 overall. It's a top 10 protected first-round pick in 28 and a 2026 third-round pick. That as well, we were talking about it last night, the contract extensions. Kirill Marchenko, the forward for Columbus, seemingly using Dorofeev's contract, which he got, is 7 years, $11 million per year. He's using that as sort of the baseline. Like, he's using it as a comp for himself for his deal once his contract expires next year. You also wonder about that with some of these GMs, maybe not wanting to pull off these big moves outside of guys like Matthew Knives who are under term. But Jason Robertson, you might have to pay him $14 million a year plus all of the assets you're going to give up. Do GMs want to wait on that and see how everything develops?
And also, in order to acquire Robertson, even if it's via offer sheet, that compensation, not just for money, is for first-round picks. Things that NHL GMs like to hold on to like they are life savings. That's why they don't happen. Well, that and because they upset other GMs when they do it. Ooh.
I'm constantly bewildered by that, too. You're in the business of winning.
Yeah.
Realistically, not of making lifelong friends. You're in the business of winning.
Right. I do wonder if it more or less has to do with the payment for acquisitions on those sorts of things.
And right. It's not that. Just be honest about it. Instead of, well, you know, everyone's worried how everyone's going to react. Is there going to be retaliation?
I really hope it has nothing to do with retaliation for the sake of you upset someone. Good. I want you to be mad. Maybe you should have took care of business and signed the player first.
We'll see on if there is anything from the Jason Robertson saga.
I would call it a saga at this point.
Yeah, I was going to say, I put a question mark there because I wasn't sure. But, I mean, I think after the Seattle stuff that broke on Thursday night into Friday, that seemed to be the case. 803-0550, the number to call if you want to jump on, give your thoughts on what the Sabres have been able to do so far through the offseason. It started hot and heavy for them. Tuck and Byram are both traded out. Byram, they get a haul for him, a defenseman, a second-round pick, the fourth overall pick. They used the second-round pick, though, in another trade to go get another defenseman, and then they used the fourth overall pick, also on a defenseman. This time, though, a right shot in Daxton Rudolph, and then all quiet in Buffalo and really across the league as the most notable move made today has been Brandon Carlo leaving Toronto for two third-round picks, a player they acquired for a first-round pick, though that has become almost infamous now amongst Maple Leaf fans and some of the poor acquisition or asset management that was done by former general manager Brad Treliving. Sabres have two more picks. Round 5, pick 156. And currently, by the way, we are on pick 141. And then they're in round 6, pick 188. We'll take a quick time out here. And we come back, we'll keep on rolling here. Day 2 of the 2026 NHL Draft. And, of course, coverage of the draft on WGR is brought to you by Outlet Liquor. When you need to stock up, displaced by case, what's your outlet? By Figo Car and Joyce, your border attorneys, and by Dash's Market, serving Western New York for over 100 years. Shop the family of finer foods. This is WGR. We are flying through round number 5. We are already on pick 146.
And this Sabres is where your optimism came in.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Sabres pick in 10 picks there at 156. We'll get a feel at the arena as we go to the Western Hotline. Joseph Calley joins the show. Joe, good afternoon. The Sabres have made a pick. The stalling has ended. We are rocking and rolling.
Yeah, yeah. And by the way, you can just call me Joe. Joseph's someone a lot more put together than I am. Let's just say that off the record. But, yes, the Sabres do finally make their pick. I'm sitting here. I'm in the interview room. We already got the audio, sent it to TJ, so you'll be able to hear that rather soon. And all of a sudden, round 5, three quarters of the way done. Like, where was this in round 4?
I know.
Round 4 was just the trade round. So kept getting blasted with the trade alert thing in here. So
sure, but it was all picks, so did it really count?
No, it didn't really count at all. So, but yeah, the pick was made. We're moving through round five, so we're in a good spot here down at KeyBank Center now.
Sounds like the music is going. I don't know if there's too many fans, though, and I do know, or at least I saw this morning, the couches haven't moved out as well. Now it's more like a high school auditorium kind of feel.
Yes, it's very much graduation style. I was telling the guys this morning about that. Just a bunch of seats. And fans have actually started filling those seats now because we're getting to the point where a lot of these guys are not going to be here. I'm surprised, right, honestly, that the Sabres' fourth-round pick was here.
So no, I was very intrigued. Excited for him. I was very happy for Oliver's – oh, I want to get his last name right.
I know.
Mirnix?
I know. I'm Mirnix, yes.
I was happy he was there because you get to have that moment. Like, we talked about it last night, Joe, right? Like, a lot of these guys, they get to have that moment. There was someone today for the Kings that just get drafted last year, re-enters, and he gets to have that moment today in the second round. So that's been really, really cool.
Also,
funny thing about his moment, real quick. Sorry, I don't mean to cut
you. No, you're good.
Off.
You're good.
A funny thing about his moment, he mentions that it's only his agent and his couple friends there when asked, who was here with you, all of that.
Oh, wow.
And his family's still in Latvia. So
wow.
He's like, my dad probably knows. His phone was in his jacket, which was taken off of him to put the jersey on. He's got no communication, so he was he's excited to get his phone back. You'll hear that in the interview there.
Yes.
Excited to get it back and answer some texts and calls. But, yeah, it was just him, his agent, and a couple friends who came with.
I like, though, Joe, you mentioned, like, the fans are now starting to file into those seats. That's got to be a pretty fun view, something that, you know, you don't get to see very often. Now you're sitting so close to a stage for one of the major events of a sporting league.
Yeah, I mean, it's cool. Compliments to the DJ as well. I don't know if you hear the music going on behind me, but
it's
we've
good.
Got some bangers throughout the day. Yeah, but there's
get TJ in
more
there.
Fans
Let's go.
Than I thought. I know. There's more fans than I thought would be here, in all seriousness, especially when the Sabres made their pick. It got loud. I wasn't expecting it to. It's all from behind, but it got very loud because everyone's kind of, I would say the ESPN stage is empty today. The Sportsnet NHL Network one is still full. So a lot of obstructed view in that area, but a lot of sound came from back there when the pick was made. So it was exciting.
Which is good because, I mean, we're all joking and having fun, but there was quite a wait between pick 20 and then the Sabres' fourth-round pick. I mean, we had a while to go. And, Joe, last thing here before we let you get ready for the Sabres' next pick. The lack of movement overall, like how do you sit with it? It does feel like, at least to me now that I've slept on it, no one's really moving that the Sabres had their eye on, but there is that report from Elliot Friedman this morning that the Sabres almost had a deal in place for Connor Hellebuck. He does waive his no move clause. They just can't get it over the line. They thought Winnipeg's asking price was just too steep. Where do you sit with this?
Yeah, I mean, it's a tough scene. I would have been emotional if Connor Hellebuck was a Buffalo Sabre, because that's just like a guy, right? Like
that
would have been unbelievable
for the Sabres, yeah.
But it sounded, you know, just a couple pieces they couldn't get on. The thing that really gets me the most is that Hellebuck did waive his no move, right? Isn't that in the report?
Yep.
That is in the report, yes.
Yeah, so like he was willing to come here and all of that. So like that's the part that stings the most. It wasn't a situation with Robertson reportedly with Seattle, right, or whatever, like saying no to the place. He was willing to come to the place. So.
You know, there's something interesting, Joe. Yarmo says it days before the trade is taken care of. I wonder if they already had the framework on Hellebuck.
They
because he
it out
says
with
it
him.
Publicly,
yeah.
Much like he did about Tuck heading to free agency.
Like, I'm sure. And that's one thing we've seen with Yarmo specifically and his few press conferences. He's pretty blunt. Like, he's not going to tell you everything, but he's not going to try and hide behind anything either. He's going to let you know what's going on.
He's going to tell you most of the things. Yeah, he's going to tell you most of what you need to know.
Yeah.
It is funny, too. Like, Hellebuck has now almost become a mirror image of Parayko. The deal happens. Parayko just says no. Wherefore, Winnipeg and Buffalo, it's the deal isn't across the line, but the player said yes.
The player says yes,
yeah,
and then
right.
The deal doesn't get finished.
Yeah.
I do wonder, though.
I think that's the thing that bothers me the most.
Well,
if the player wants to play here, you know.
Here's the good news. You can always revisit the framework now because the fourth and eighth overall picks are no longer in discussion.
Right.
So,
sure.
Is this
sure.
over? Ultimately, I say no.
No.
I don't think it could be over, considering where the Sabres are. They've got to make a bigger move here to replace some of the pieces they missed for more instant impact, but I'll leave it at that.
Joe, well, thanks for jumping on with us. We'll let you get ready for the next Sabres pick. It is currently pick 152, and the Sabres are up at 156. Have a good afternoon, man. Talk soon.
Yeah, you too. We'll talk soon. Thanks, guys.
That is Joseph Calley.
That's radio's Joe Calley. Get it right.
On the Western Hotline there, he is down at the arena having a grand old time. They're playing some bumps there. And I'm glad the because I was wondering, too, with the Sabres not having a ton of picks, there was not a big move last night to maybe get the fans in the building and maybe want to all kind of celebrate together.
And most of the fans would have wanted you to trade the picks anyway.
Right. That, you know, you at least still had a good reaction there. So I really do enjoy that. We'll listen back in a little bit to Oliver's Mirnik's, his appearance with the media. We'll do that probably in the next hour. Real quick, though, before we wrap up this hour, yeah, the Hellebuck stuff. It is almost kind of a funny, you know, just moment in Sabres history where two major trades for Jarmo Kekalainen in less than a year on the job almost go through, but they fall right at the line for different reasons. For Colton Parayko, the deal is in place. The deal's agreed upon. The player says no. Where for Connor Hellebuck, the player says yes, he's ready to move, but the deal is not in place, and eventually the plug seems to be pulled by the Sabres on that one. But those could have been two massive deals. And the Hellebuck one, we said it with Joe, too. That could have been one of the biggest moves, I think, in recent franchise history.
But I also suspect, and we got to get going here, I suspect, though, with the draft reset and all the pieces are gone, this may not be over.
It may not be over. We will see, though. I mean, what is to come? I know you were talking with Travis Yost off air.
Yeah, I was messaging Travis. I'm like, where's my trades, man? And Travis has the same feeling of like, no, once we get out of this and heading into free agency, deals should be back. And that makes me think, don't put away Connor Hellebuck just yet. With the number 4 overall pick being such a stickler, right? Yarmo's saying we had to be really blown away in order to move from 4. I would imagine that was Winnipeg's asking price. Like, that's a core piece in the return.
Almost definitely, I think. The issue was they wanted 4 and wouldn't swap with 8.
And now we can reset. All picks reset. You could have projections where those selections may or may not be. But now we could talk prospects. We could talk NHLers. Revisit the framework of this and go, hey, what do we say about doing this instead?
All right, Sabres are up in 2 picks, so we'll take a quick timeout here, and hopefully when we get back, we'll have the pick right away. 803-0550, the number to call. And then after that pick, the Sabres will have one more. We will see if Jarmo Kekalainen has a bit of Brandon Bean in him wanting to add a 7th-round pick at the 11th hour.
How dare you even bring that up?
I am just always prepared.
How dare you?
I am always prepared for a Buffalo general manager to do that when we are covering the draft, to add at the 11th hour a 7th-round pick near the end of the draft as well. But as of right now, the Sabres are expected to select in round 5 at pick 156, and then in round 6, pick 188. We'll be right back. We'll talk with Paul Hamilton as well, and we'll most likely hear from the general manager once the day wraps up. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer, this is WGR.